Welcome back. This is Lisa Garr, and my next guest founded the science of biogeometry, which basically uses the energy principles and geometrical shapes to balance biological energy systems within the overall framework of environmental energy interactions, much like our ancient Egypt was built on. And so he talks about how this natural balance exists everywhere. It just gets disturbed by cell phone towers and city planning and the wrong energy systems and so forth and other energy interactions. So we're going to talk about how certain things disturb the state and how to create the balance all over again. We will be right back with my guest, Dr. Ibrahim Karim. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Lisa Garr, and I'll be right back with you. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr. So our Earth has a natural living energy system in it. It's called the physics of quality, and everything is interconnected, and it has kind of a universal symphony, so to speak. Well, this natural balance, though, gets disturbed when you put on cell phone towers or where cities are planned that are not in accordance with this type of energy, or there's other energy infractions that disturb this state, and then it creates an imbalance in this otherwise natural balance. Well, my guest today, Dr. Ibrahim Karim, he founded the science of biogeometry. And biogeometry uses these energy principles and then geometrical shapes to rebalance the system that was disturbed. And we see it all over the world where it was originated in ancient Egypt and many other places in the world. So I welcome my guest, Dr. Karim. Thank you for joining me.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you.
I'm so excited about this conversation. So I want to first ask you just an overall concept of biogeometry. How did you discover it, and what is it?
Well, let's look first at what's happening today, because it will lead us to the need of biogeometry. In the age of information, mm-hmm. we have a hidden time bomb. This time bomb could just kill biological life on Earth. Because the age of information depends on electromagnetic radiation, and it is increasing at a tremendous rate. And this is radiation. It just kills your immune system. So, usually a civilization does not end from things they are aware of. For example, we are aware that. Of nuclear, we could have a nuclear activity that could end the world, or we could have an environmental problem that could end the world. So we know all those things. And when we know the dangers, we will avoid them. But the danger of electromagnetic radiation, it seems that very few people are aware of that. And the rest, they don't want to be aware of it.
Are we not aware of it because there's not a lot of reporting done on, or there's no direct relationship between immunity and EMFs?
Well, when you don't have a solution at hand, if you tell the people the truth, you will only scare them.
I see.
So we need a new science that addresses this problem. You see, today you can enjoy all the existing sciences, but we don't have a science today that addresses this problem directly. If we look at electromagnetic radiation, we will see that you cannot deal with it like other environmental hazards. For example, usually our logical way of thinking is when you have environmental pollution, the right way is to reduce it. That's the solution we're doing in our mindset of today. But with electromagnetic radiation, you cannot just go out and reduce it, because you can reduce the power, but every day you're putting new sources at a tremendous rate.
What does that EMF radiation do to, say, the Earth or to geopathic stress? What does it do?
Well, EMF radiation, first of all, you mentioned geopathic stress. That means what it does, it will create a certain harmful effect in secondary grids of Earth radiation in the Earth, and these grids are the main source for cancer and such diseases. Otherwise, electromagnetic radiation itself will reduce the immune system.
Okay.
So it has an effect on it. So this will affect animals, plants, and human life, of course. And there is no escape from it, since our whole civilization depends on the ever-increasing electromagnetic radiation of the information age.
All right, let me ask you about the grids you mentioned. How do these grids impact immune systems of our livestock and of us?
Well, there are two types of grids, you see. Electromagnetic radiation are causing their own grids, and then they interact with the Earth grids, and then when they interact with the Earth grids, they sort of reinforce harmful effects in the Earth grids. Since the 1920s, there's a scientist called von Pohl in Germany. He mapped all the cases of cancer in the town of Wilbisburg in Germany, and he found that all cases of cancer were somehow grouped on areas that had underground water sources and crossings of Earth radiation. They call those grids, those of Earth radiation, they call them Hartmann and Curry grids. They are not electromagnetic, so that's why one reason that people cannot detect them, because they are not electromagnetic, they are compression waves.
Okay.
You know, the Earth has magnetic lines coming from the north to the south, you know, the magnetic mm-hmm. lines we know. Now, any motion will create around it waves. You see, just like mm-hmm. a boat in water. Mm-hmm. So when an electromagnetic line moves, it will create compression waves around it. And those compression waves create patterns. So those secondary patterns that are not electromagnetic, that you cannot detect them with electromagnetic devices, these are what we call Earth radiation grids.
Okay, and those are apparently increasing, the radiation grids in the Earth are increasing?
Well, their harm is increasing. The grids are there. Usually the grids are in some areas, they're very beneficent. In some areas, they're very harmful. But the harmful aspect is increasing with the proliferation of EMF.
Now, how do you know that it's directly related to EMF? It's not related to something like what we just had a conversation about, fuel and about production plants and so forth. How do you know that it is related to the EMFs?
Well, EMF is, the main culprit. But you have all those other things can affect Earth radiation, because Earth radiation are, you can imagine them like carrier waves. You know, they carry information and go with it from place to place. So if you have plants, if you have radioactivity, if you have any type of chemical pollution, if you have any of that, all that will affect the Earth grids and then will affect the people who live in those on those Earth grids.
Right. And so it could be an oil refinery, it could be a chemical production plant or a dumping
zone.
It
could be anything, you see, but the electromagnetic radiation is, let's say, is the thing that exists most now in the Earth's atmosphere. I mean, you know, we are afraid always, we're speaking about global warming. And you know that electromagnetic radiation, they are microwaves. And you know, in a microwave, you heat your drink and your food.
Mm-hmm.
So if microwaves move through the atmosphere, in their movement, they move the air around them, and movement creates heat. So actually, the age of information is contributing to global warming. I mean, whether we understand it or whether we like it or not,
right.
We are contributing in a minute way to global warming.
Now, what's the difference between those and the frequency of, say, a radio signal that's coming through right now?
Well, all those electromagnetic radiation, whether it's a radio signal, whether it's television, whether it's, I mean, any type of electromagnetic radiation is harmful.
In small amounts?
It's the nature of electromagnetic radiation. You know, electromagnetic radiation, the wave has two components. It has an electric component and a magnetic component. The electric component is very harmful to the human system. The magnetic component is okay.
Okay.
So any type of electromagnetic radiation is causing problems. And you know, today, if you look at the amount of problems we have, the amount of health problems we have, and we don't know the causes, you know. You have so many things.
It could be pinpointed to so many different things. It could be a tainted food supply and soil and air and
water. Yeah, we don't know the causes, but definitely there's one major factor that's common to all of them, is that electromagnetic radiation lowers our ability to fight all those things off, you know.
Because we're electrical beings?
We're not, that's the thing, we're not, if we were electrical beings, we wouldn't be harmed.
No, but I mean,
we are subtle energy beings. You know, this is on a higher level than electrical beings. We have a sort of electric waves in the body, but they are not the same like the electric waves you have in the industry.
I see, like the heart and so forth, and that's all.
They are different. Yes, you can measure them through, through electromagnetic devices. But in themselves, they are not electromagnetic. They produce compression waves, you know. The heartbeat, like if you beat with your hands, you produce compression waves, like sound waves, you know, like inaudible sound waves.
Okay, so, I mean, this is where this is going here is basic. Look, I'm sitting in a studio and I've got a TV and I've got a computer, a couple of computer monitors. I got my cell phone and I've got all these different things in this particular studio. And anyone's living room is going to look the same in terms of these frequencies that are interrupting my personal immune system. Let's talk about this on a planetary basis. In you base a lot of your work on ancient Egypt. How did you discover the particular grids that, well, not you, but all the pyramids and everything that's been spoken about for so long, how are these based on the electrical energy system or this biogeometry that you talk about?
Well, let's first clarify one thing. The science of biogeometry is not, let's say, derived from ancient Egypt.
Right.
The science of biogeometry is a modern science. It's a physics of quality. But having discovered it today, and 40 years ago when I discovered that, I found that it has the same mindset. It's the same paradigm like the ancient sciences of quality. You know, when the Greek scientists went to ancient Egypt, and like Pythagoras, for example, he stayed 22 years in ancient Egypt and the temples there. He learned the secret sciences of the temples. Then he came out, and in ancient Egypt, they had two types of sciences. They had the qualitative aspects of any type of energy, and they had the quantitative aspects. Now, when he came out, he couldn't divulge the secret energies that were mostly qualitative, so he started teaching the quantitative science. And that's the basis of our mathematics, the basis of all our modern civilization.
Mm-hmm.
So our modern civilization is based on a quantitative science and the paradigm where, for example, you want to keep the human being out of your experiment because you want it to be totally objective. So if you build any science with the human being outside of it, you tend to have a fantastic civilization, ultimately at the cost of the human being, because he wasn't in the center of that science from the beginning.
I see.
He wasn't interacting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you speak of quality, a science of quality means a science of effects. So what do I mean by quality? I mean something is affecting my energy system. So a science of quality is the science of the effect of anything on the user. So it's basically putting the human being as the measure of all things at the center of the science. Now, if we are entering into a paradigm where we have a physics of quality, and that's what Biogeometry introduces, a physics of quality. we see the world in a different paradigm. For example, for biogeometry, you are not going to reduce quantitatively electromagnetic radiation because you cannot do that. But what we are going to do is change its quality, change its effect on the human energy system.
Mm-hmm.
And if we change that, if we have a science of quality that can interact,
yes,
in the area between the objects and the receiver, so that at the end we are turning everything, we are harmonizing everything to be beneficent to the user, then actually we can make the modern world of information work for us.
Mm-hmm.
I would have the electromagnetic radiation profilating all over the Earth. It would be a healing ray.
Just like you, I mean, you use the example of ancient Egypt because the pyramids were built in accordance with the biogeometry of the environment, right? Of that particular.
Yes.
Explain how that.
It's this. That's what I'm saying. It's this paradigm that we want to create. First of all, the paradigm has many aspects that bring us to ancient Egypt. First of all, the energy of shapes. You see, the energy of shapes is something new today. We are looking for free energy in the atmosphere. And there are types of free energy. There's the sun, there's the wind, all those are free energies. But now, if geometrical shapes can emit energy, they interact with the environment and emit energy, it's a sort of permanent free energy that we can use.
How do the the geological shapes emit energy?
Well, any shape, when you put it in something moving, imagine water that's moving, and you put any shape in the water. Now, the shape will create certain turbulence in the water, won't it?
Mm-hmm.
So the turbulence is a change in the quality of the water. You see? It is creating a change there. And this change could be harmonizing the flow of water or disturbing the flow of water. And since everything is moving, that means shapes are actually interacting and changing the quality of subtle energy in their environment around them.
So if you have a giant boulder in a stream, the shape of the stream is then shaped by the flow.
It's shaped by that boulder,
yes. The boulder, okay. Mm-hmm.
Now imagine that we have discovered certain shapes that can go a step beyond that. They can actually take the energy from the environment, from around it, from the stream, and then radiate it, let's say shoot it out. So that means we are treating energy quality in a way like we treat normal energy. You see?
Mm-hmm,
you can actually radiate quality. You can store quality. And once you know how to store quality, to recreate quality, or to radiate quality, that means you have a new science that uses energy quality as its main cornerstone.
Okay, so you're using shapes in order to change the quality of energy. And by the way, Dr. Karim is Egyptian. He was born and raised in Egypt and is a scientist from Egypt. So many of the things that he's discovered have been based on his native land, but also he's done a lot of healing for areas when he has gone in and actually applied these wide-scale sciences to certain regions. We're going to talk a little bit about the one in Switzerland when we come back. So this is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM, and we'll be right back with Dr. Karim. My guest is Dr. Karim. He's an Egyptian scientist. We're talking about the science of biogeometry, and we're going to get into some of the energy principles from which the pyramids were built on in ancient Egypt, and how the reason that so many people are drawn to Egypt or feel that connection with ancient Egypt even is because of the energy field that's created by the placement of the pyramids, and how you can, and Dr. Karim has found a way to emulate that particular biogeometrical field and bring it into your current environment, your working environment, your home environment, and how to create that even with food and water, and how you can create that type of harmonic resonance using what the ancient Egyptians have taught us. So we will be back with this conversation. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. And my guest is Egyptian scientist, Dr. Ibrahim Karim. Now, Dr. Karim, we were talking a little bit about before the break about these specific placement and the energy, the electromagnetic field that happens as a result of the pyramids, or actually that does not happen, that disrupts that creates a resonance, a harmonic resonance as a result of the pyramids. Explain a little bit about this placement, the field that it creates, that harmonic resonance that it creates, and how it was recreated so long ago.
Well, this is an interesting point, because usually when people speak about the pyramids, they are usually speaking about the huge size of the stones or how they were erected. And until today, most engineers, I'm an engineer and an architect myself, I mean, we don't know all the secrets of how they were built. Some things defy our modern knowledge. For example, when you have columns and lentils that weigh 300 tons or something like that, they defy our modern way of thinking completely. They are so megalithic and so huge. And so people today are always discussing how was the pyramid constructed, how old is the pyramid, is it 3000 BC or 5000 BC, things like that. What they don't understand, that the most important thing in the pyramid construction is not the pyramid itself. It's actually the spot, the location. And this location on which the pyramids, each pyramid is built, actually, these are sacred locations with a very, very powerful harmonizing energy. Like we refer to them as sacred power spots, for example. Mm. And the ancient Egyptians, when they erected a pyramid or when they erected an obelisk, it was always erected as an amplifier to the energy of the sacred power spot, so that it distributes it all over the environment around it. So the pyramid was actually distributing and connecting with the harmonizing energy of the earth. So human activity and the harmonizing energy of the earth and the sky, because those buildings were connecting the earth with similar sacred locations in the sky.
Like right directly under Orion's belt? Is that what you
mean? Yes, you could. I mean, if the same way you discover sacred areas on the earth, you could actually discover certain locations in the sky. Mm. And you mark each location with the star there. It's not the star itself that's sacred. The location is much bigger than the star. So you have Sirius, you have in the area of Sirius, you have around it one of those locations. You have in the Orion, you have in the circumpolar star. There are many such locations, and they usually connected the earthly location with the sky location.
As above, so below, right?
Yes, and this energy that they connected with is a sort of a multidimensional energy quality, like a portal to all existing dimensions beyond our own. So this harmonizing energy was a main aspect in city planning, in rituals, in everything. I mean, since the first caveman came on Earth and he erected his just his megalithic stones on areas where he felt that they were oracles and things like that, or they had healing waters. And this is the main aspect. It's the energy of place and not the buildings themselves. As an architect, and I'm a professor of architecture, and we teach the history of architecture, describing the styles of the ancient buildings, whether in Egypt or in Europe or in America. We keep describing the eras and the styles and all that. But after many years of teaching, I asked myself, well, those buildings are usually found on older buildings that are today, if you dig a bit 10 feet or 20 feet under the existing temple, you'd find another one. And then you dig further, you'd find another one.
Right.
So you see,
ancient societies,
civilizations
built on top of each other, right?
Yeah, different civilizations use the same places. So you ask yourself, I mean, why should different civilizations keep using the same spot? So the area must have something about it. And then in biogeometry, I was looking at this energy as a quality. So I developed a physics of quality in order to understand how this quality harmonizes the biological energy system, how this quality is a quality of multidimensional communication and all that.
Okay. Let's talk about that multidimensional energies and communication. How do you explain that in terms of physics?
Well, it's very simple. If today, if you have a science of quality, that means what is a science of quality? It is not quantitative science is like something linear. You count 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, it goes from the smallest to the largest in a linear quantitative way. But qualitative science is like a musical instrument when you have strings, and then every string, if you pluck it, it resonates with every other string that's half or double its size. And that's why you have the phenomena that you call octaves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine the musical instrument to go from zero, the smallest thing in the universe, to infinity, the largest thing of the universe. So with the science of quality, you'd still have the octave principle, the resonance principle, from zero to infinity, binding everything in the universe as if the whole universe was one musical symphony. Now, that means that you could use a string to interact with another string on another dimension or on another invisible level. Because what happens when you pluck a string and the other string resonates with it? There's an exchange of information between the two strings. So using a science of quality means you can actually enter into qualitative exchange beyond our time and space concepts into other dimensions. And in our physics of waves, we show how within the existing waves, you have other dimensions of waves existing within our waves. We do not detect them, but they exist in there. That's why biogeometry, if we start speaking about different activities in biogeometry, you will find that I can go from the very physical, materialistic things to very esoteric things. They would all fall into biogeometry. And you cannot ask me a question about any science, whatever it is, not even a science or any phenomena, where we cannot apply biogeometry.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the advanced humans that you said erected these pyramids or existed in this time. And you even say it could date back as far as 36,000 years ago.
Yes.
Why do you say this, and what type of human was that?
Well, the type of human was a human who, the moment he understood the energy quality, he, through that knowledge, he became like a demigod or something. He became a very special human. And I'll give you an example. For example, when they took a string, one string that they call the monochord. And Pythagoras, when he went to Egypt, he brought this concept of the monochord with him to Europe. If you bring just one string or one jumping rope, and then you turn that, after a bit, it will divide itself in half, and then divide itself in a third, two-thirds. And it will go through certain proportions, and then come back to the whole proportion again. Now, they noticed that, and they said, if a string, when it vibrates, it will automatically recreate certain fixed proportions all the time, that means that these proportions are actually the proportions of creation, because any vibration will recreate from it all the other proportions, and then each proportion will keep recreating the others. So they got those proportions, and they said, these are the proportions of creation. Like we would be now, through mathematics and proportion, we would be interacting with the mind of divinity, with the mind of the creation. So this was what the ancients called music, you see. They took those proportions, they made the musical scales with them, and by playing music, they were actually entering into resonance with divinity, with the whole universe, and with the creative power of the universe.
With stringed instruments?
Well, it could be any, because now once you have the notes, you know, and your notes represent the creative power of the universe, then you have a fantastic connection with the creation, the law of creation. Mm-hmm. And all our modern, those people do not understand today that all types of music are one, in a way or another, a way of interacting with the laws of creation. And that's what makes music very special to humanity.
I don't remember the connection between Egypt and music. I don't necessarily, I mean, explain to me what I'm missing here.
Between this, well, the proportions, you know, the proportions on a string, on a monochord. Imagine those proportions. If you put your finger on every proportion and you played it, you would get a different note, a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
So now you would be recreating the notes on a string. So it's the same, those natural divisions that the string would go through if you're moving it. You could actually use those divisions to create the sounds that we call our notes of music, musical notes.
And these were represented in the hieroglyphics or the ancient carvings? Did you see these?
No, they were not represented that way, but they were, you see, when Pythagoras went to Egypt, he studied 22 years in the temples there, and he said a few things that indicate that. He said, for example, he spoke about the music of the spheres.
Mm.
That means everything in the universe was going according to musical laws.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Then he said everything is number.
Mm-hmm.
You see, mm-hmm. He couldn't divulge more than that because these were temple sciences.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our interest is not the quantitative aspect of creation. Our interest here is the qualitative aspect of creation, you see. So the notes, you have the proportions of the notes, but when you play them, you react by hearing the notes. Because the notes, you need the listener so that you hear it in your mind.
And these frequencies, you say, was what helped people, the humans at the time, go into these multidimensional energies, into these different frequencies, right?
I'm giving you just the example of music.
Uh-huh.
This is one example, but if then you take those proportions of music that you used to create musical instruments,
mm-hmm.
you take those proportions and create architecture. That means that your architecture now is actually in resonance with creation, with the divine mind. So even your temples, your pyramids and everything are in resonance with that creation, and by putting your architectural works on sacred power spots, you're emphasizing the spiritual link.
So it's a compounding effect. I like the word sacred passports.
Yeah, you know, it is the ancient Egyptian, and well, this is the paradigm of biogeometry today. The cornerstone of biogeometry is this sacred energy, but sacred energy quality. Now, this is the same paradigm like in ancient Egypt, when every motion they did was supposed to be in resonance with this sacred energy quality.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they ate, every word they said, everything. So the whole activity pattern of life was actually governed by the sacred energy quality. So they lived, you could say the ancient Egyptian, he lived in total harmony with the universe. And when you live in total harmony with the laws of the universe, you don't have a word for spirituality. You don't have a word for religion.
It's not
you don't
separate.
Need all those words because right. You're already living in the mind of the Creator.
So they lived in harmony with the trees or the sand or any or even angels. Everything was just in all one.
It was the human being. You know, imagine yourself today. If I say each one of us is, let's say, a musical note. Now, today, we would look at the musical note with our scientific mind. We would study its frequency, its amplitude, and its wavelength, and all those things. That's how we would go deeper and deeper analyzing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ancient Egyptian mind would go differently. He would find the place of the note in the universal symphony. You see, it's a different way of looking at it.
Right, but when they all come together, they all make one sound.
Well, that's it. When you find your place in the universal symphony, you become one with the power and laws of creation.
Mm-hmm. All,
and that's when a human being rises to become a special human being that people could call demigods today. But these are human beings that have risen to a level where they are in total resonance with the laws of creation, with the sacred laws of the universe.
So the hypothesis is that's why they were able to create such huge scale monuments with 300 ton stones stacked on top of each other that fit together.
Yes, but these are only, you see, now once I explained to you the whole context of spirituality in there, then creating those monuments would be of secondary importance to the real thing. The real thing is the divine energy, the sacred energy. That's the real thing.
I like that. Yes. I'd love to hear more about it. From some of the YouTube videos that I was watching, you said that maybe that's why many people call them aliens, because they were so alien from us, the way that we are now involved with our ego and consciousness and so forth. And many of the drawings had their elongated skulls that were
yes.
in the hieroglyphics that were symbolic of being closer yes. to the gods, as you had explained.
Yes.
I would love to know more about that consciousness, because it would help us understand more about biogeometry and also understand more about the why Egypt is known as kind of the cradle of civilization, why we even have the pyramid on the U.S. dollar. And
well, first of all, I want you to look at something. If you see that actually Western civilization has come out of the temples of Egypt through the Greeks, like Plato, Pythagoras, mm-hmm. and all that, who created Western civilization.
We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back with that cliffhanger. Thank you so much. We will be right back. You're listening to Egyptian scientist Dr. Karim. I'm Lisa Garr, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM.